Welcome to the Songs of Note podcast, where we talk about the songs we love and the stories behind them. I'm your host, Ryan Gregg. Hey, this is Ryan. Thank you so much for joining me for the Songs of Note podcast, where we talk about music and the stories behind songs and artists, and honestly, just what I think is good music. If you're listening, I hope that you think that the songs are good, because the biggest thrill is being able to either expand somebody's knowledge of a song that they already liked and open a deeper appreciation for the thing, or even like helping people find songs that they hadn't heard of before. Now, today's song, I'm sure you've heard, because today we are talking about Tom Petty's amazing song, I Won't Back Down, from 1989's Full Moon Fever album. And I'm talking with Jim Bevilia. You might recognize Jim's name. He's been on the podcast two other times, and it's two of my other favorite episodes. If you haven't heard these, episode 25 was on the Oasis song Wonderwall, and then I was researching 90s songs, and immediately after was like, oh hey, I want to do an episode on Counting Crows in the Long December, because I don't know the story behind that song. And Jim had written an article on it, so I asked him back on. So he's on episode 27 as well, episodes 25 and 27 of this podcast. If you haven't heard him before, featured Jim. But Jim Bevilia is a music journalist, super, super nice guy, and has written a bunch of these top 100 best songs books about like the Beatles and Springsteen and Tom Petty. And so I'm gonna have a link in the show notes to his ebook, Tom Petty's 100 Best Songs. But just real pleasure getting to talk to him and kind of get a deeper appreciation for what Tom Petty was going through when he was writing songs like Free Fallin' and Won't Back Down. Why was he writing this kind of stuff? We mentioned Warren Zanes several times in the interview. He was Tom Petty's biographer, and I had him on the show in episode 39. So if you haven't heard that one, gosh, that's one of my favorite episodes, because he had so many personal stories of actually interacting with Tom Petty. And if you haven't already signed up for a free bonus episode of the podcast, you can do so. I don't know if I've mentioned that much, but if you go to thesongsofnote.com, you'll have a pop-up that says sign up for my newsletter. If you want to keep up with the things that I'm talking about or just the latest updates with the show, you can enter your email, and when you do, you'll get an automated email from me with a link to an unreleased episode of the show that talks through 27 of my favorite songs. And in that email, there's also links to the playlist that I made of these songs on Apple Music and on Spotify. So I think it's cool. Hopefully there's some songs in there that you haven't heard. I love talking about songs I love, and I really like talking about the personal memory that has to go with it. So like one of the songs was like the song I was blaring when I left from college, and I don't know, I think it's fun. Hopefully you'll think it's fun. But if there's songs that you hadn't heard of before and you like, feel free to respond to that email and let me know, like, because I love interacting with people about music. But it's thesongsofnote.com, and you should see a pop-up that says enter your email. If you don't, in the navigation, there's a bonus episode link. But that's it, and I just appreciate you guys listening to this show. We are on 70 plus episodes at this point. I just hit 50,000 downloads, and it's just it's still, you know, for podcasting, I don't know if that's a lot or not many, because I guess it depends on your subject matter, but that means a lot to me, and I really appreciate if you're listening to this show. I appreciate that you take the time to click on it, to listen to it wherever you are, in your car, in your commute, in your driving. That's three different types of car driving. If you're working out, wherever you're doing, I appreciate that you spending the time to hang with me and listen to music and be more deeply informed for the thing you love. And I love music, and I love talking about music, and I really enjoyed this interview with Jim. So let's head on over there now. This is Jim Bevilia, and we're talking about Tom Petty's song I Won't Back Down. Hey Jim, thank you so much for taking time to come back on the show today. We're glad to have you.
Ryan, thanks so much for having me.
Man, I tell you what, I really enjoyed the two episodes you've been on so far, where we talked about the story behind Wonderwall from Oasis and the County Crows song Long December. And I was looking at how do I get a Tom Petty song back on this show? And then I was like, man, I think Jim wrote something about it. And I saw that you have an ebook on Tom Petty's top 100 best songs, and I was like, yes, this is the moment to see if you come back. So I appreciate you being willing to chat again.
No problem. Talking about Tom Petty, that's always a good thing.
That's a good day. That's a good thing for sure. Well, what do you think? So let's talk about Tom in general, because like when I think about Tom Petty, he's almost like an American institution. It's like he has spoken the soundtrack into the lives of so many people just from songs that he wrote. Like, what made you? Oh, that's my opinion, at least. What made you want to write a book about his 100 best songs?
Well, you know, I've been a fan since, you know, just when I was a kid, listening to his music. And I think you spoke to it a little bit, you know, this idea of being a soundtrack for a lot of people. And the other thing about Tom Petty is this idea of integrity, where you really got the feel that the stuff that he was writing kind of came from his heart. It wasn't forced in any way. It wasn't fake in any way. And I think that's what resonated with so many people, is that they saw somebody who, even though he was a famous rock star, kind of could touch on their experiences. And the best songwriters can do that. And the other thing about Tom Petty, the consistency is what blows me away. Most artists have one or two where you say, oh, well, what were they doing there? And you look at Tom Petty's catalog and it's just not there. I mean, even the albums that maybe didn't sell as well, when you listen to them objectively, they're just filled with these amazing songs. He never did anything halfway. So I think all those things kind of put together make Tom Petty just this special artist who kind of stands on a pedestal when you look at the rock and roll music scene over the last, I mean, what, the half century, really.
Right. I mean, I totally agree. He's somebody who you can always put on anytime you put on Tom Petty. And if you're playing it loud enough, if somebody's walking by, they're usually going to nod or like bop their head or be like, oh, I love that song. Like, he's just one of those guys. And so, the song that we're talking about today is his song, I Won't Back Down, which for me, the first time, and I know I heard it when it came out in 1989, Full Moon Fever. But the first time I remember like really connecting with it was, I was a huge Pearl Jam fan, and they did a cover of it, like low key, like electric guitar and Eddie singing. And I was like, oh, these guys are like really holding up this song. And I feel like that was like, as a teenager, that was the thing that I was like, okay, I better, you know, go dive into some Tom Petty if these guys are covering him. Do you remember when you first heard the song or the Full Moon Fever record?
I do, because it was a time, you know, I'm dating myself here, but I can remember well when the song came out, Ryan. It was a time where it was interesting for Petty, because his last album was the first one that really didn't have those singles that kind of busted out and were not so much even top 10, but just had that kind of exposure on MTV. The album before that was Let Me Up, I've Had Enough. Yeah. And the singles were Jamming Me, which I think was a top 20 hit. It's kind of a funny song that he wrote with Bob Dylan. And then also Runaway Trains, which was a bit of a departure for him, a little bit synthesizer heavy and things like that. But that album was made in a time of personal turmoil for him. But then the Traveling Wilburys album had come out in the interim. And so he kind of received this boost of popularity, and everybody knew that Jeff Lynne had produced the Traveling Wilburys, was a member, and then was producing Full Moon Fever, this new album without the Heartbreakers, which was a big deal back then because they were always a part of his music. Right. And this was the first single, I Won't Back Down. And I think there might have been some trepidation among people. Well, what's this going to sound like, Tom Petty without the Heartbreakers? And he comes out with just this amazing first track, and it just kind of removed all doubts. And then it made you want to hear the rest of it. Like, what else was coming from this collaboration? So that's what I remember about, you know, that first kind of exposure to I Won't Back Down.
I love it. Well, so because I knew we were talking, so I was like, I'm really going to try to like get myself in the headspace of maybe where the different albums landed. And so like when, for people listening, the way that this album was released is, like Jim said, they, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers had recorded a slew of hits at this point. And I'm just going to name some, but it was like American Girl, Refugee, The Waiting, You Got Lucky, just tons of like classic Tom Petty, the Heartbreakers songs. But then, like you said, the album right before it was Let Me Up, with there was no like jump off songs, no huge smashes. Mm-hmm. And don't you think that I mean, do you think rather that's the catalyst for him saying, okay, I gotta, I just got to step away from this thing. It's successful. I got to get back to center myself to what the songs are that are important to me. Or do you think it was something like that, that led to him doing his first solo record and then it just blowing up, being so popular?
Yeah, well, the way he told the story was that, you know, he never intended, you know, after Let Me Up, He Had Enough, he knew that there was a little break in there. He had been dealing with the arson, you know, that they burned down his house and, you know, his family was in there. He was in there when that happened. So the kind of a terrible experience for him. And he was dealing with all that. And then he got involved with the Wilburys. And so that was kind of a boost. But when he started making these songs, he actually invited the Heartbreakers to be involved. Now, Mike Campbell was majorly involved. He was a part of Full Moon Fever all the way through. But he invited some of the others, and they kind of expressed reticence right off the bat. I think it was Free Fallin' was the first song that they did. Yeah. And they kind of expressed reticence to being a part of that. They couldn't hear where they were going to be a part of something like that. So that's when he decided, okay, this is going to be a solo album. This is what I'm going to do, knowing that it would cause ripples among his fans, knowing that people would say, oh, you know, where are the Heartbreakers and all this? And so it was a big step for him to take, but I think he felt that good about the connection he had with Jeff Lynne, because Jeff was kind of co-writing a lot of these songs with him, and he heard the results. He knew, you know, that there was this kind of simpatico relationship just by Free Fallin' was the first song that they kind of wrote together. So right off the bat, there's this classic. Yeah. And then I think I Won't Back Down was the next one. Man. So immediately they just felt there was something special there. So I think there was no turning back once he had got to that point.
Well, for the people who don't know the story, and you kind of mentioned a little bit there on the fire, can you talk a little bit about what led up, what happened with the fire? And I don't think I remember that he and his family were actually in the house when that happened.
Yeah, it was a scary thing. You know, he was actually, you know, crawling below the smoke in his house. You know, his wife and one of his kids were in there. He told them to go out and get in the pool, you know, so that because he knew that wouldn't burn. And it was later deemed arson. They never found out who did it. And so it was just kind of this shock. It was at a point where he was kind of in between tours with Bob Dylan, where the Heartbreakers were backing up Bob Dylan, and he kind of had to scrap that to get back and get his life together. And then in the middle of all that, tried to get back with the Heartbreakers, made this record, Let Me Up, I've Had Enough, which, again, even though people say, well, it's kind of a down point, still has some great material on there, because he was just incapable of not doing that.
Right.
But still, this kind of shock to the system. And I think this idea of Jeff Lynne and then the Wilburys coming along at the time that it did, he became very close friends with George Harrison at this point. Yeah. I think it was kind of a balm for him from dealing with all of this stress and all of this crisis, and helped him to kind of put things back in perspective, fall in love with his music again at that time.
Well, and for people who don't know the name Jeff Lynne is the lead singer of ELO, which is a very popular band in their own right. And he's very well respected songwriter and producer. And I was going back to Warren Zane's biography on Tom Petty, just going back through some of the things he was saying about this time period. And it was interesting hearing him describe, and I think it was some of the interview questions with Jeff Lynne. I think he was answering some of this, but hearing them kind of describe the recording process. And it sounded like in years past with Tom Petty and Mike Campbell, like they were very much into capturing the essence of a live performance, or the capturing a moment of performance that was incredible. And Jeff Lynne was like, what's important is capturing a good sound without tons of distracting effects. So we want like a clean vocal. I want a good guitar part, and I don't want just filler electric guitar parts. I want you to come up with like specific lines. And it's a real different methodology of recording. But you can see how that really paid off. And even Mike Campbell was saying how like at first he was like, I come up with something on the spot. And then Jeff Lynne would be like, well, what if you did this? And Jeff Lynne would have some awesome guitar part. And so I think Mike Campbell said that really pushed him to step up his game as far as coming up with specific parts. but you can imagine like the I would think the pressure of having to deliver hit after hit after hit when people know you, your name is on the band, this is your deal, and then like the pressure of that would just have to be tremendous, and especially throwing in band tensions. You know, there's a documentary, the Running Down a Dream documentary, and you hear about the band stress within, specifically, I think with the drummer, and he was the one who had the quote after playing Free Fall, and it was like he didn't get it, like you had mentioned, and Tom Petty's like, what do you mean? Free Fall is a great song. I guess I don't have a question there as much as I'm stating the fact that, man, you can see how a guy would be ready for a change, and how somebody like Jeff Lynne could really breathe a sigh of relief and fresh eyes and ears to something that you know is good, but something that your band is not providing. Would you agree?
I think the interesting thing, Ryan, about it is that if you had told somebody in circa 1986 who would be someone that Tom Petty would work with, Jeff Lynne would probably be one of the last on the list, because you think of the Heartbreakers and you think of this kind of rootsy rock and roll and very authentic, this great live band. And Jeff Lynne, as you mentioned, the Electric Light Orchestra, I mean, it was all about, you know, taking these ornate orchestral instruments and putting it together with rock and roll. So at the time when you heard that, you say, Tom Petty and Jeff Lynne, how does this work? But what you mentioned is that Jeff Lynne kind of focused him on, you know, making the best recording possible, because that's the one thing about ELO music, Jeff Lynne music, no matter, you know, if the song's good or bad, and they're usually good because he's a great songwriter, they all sound fantastic because he is just this amazing producer who knows how to make this ear candy. Mm-hmm. And that's what he really brought to the table. He took some of the rawness away from it and sweetened it up in a way that made it kind of jump on radio. And it really was something different. And then on top of that, they came up with this collection of songs that, as consistent as I've mentioned Tom Petty being, I don't know that there's a better top to bottom collection of songs in terms of the writing that he had ever done in his career. So I think that part of that freedom fed into that. So it was just this relationship that, at the time, you wouldn't have thought fit together, but turned out to be this amazing connection that produced the unbelievable music.
Well, I love that George Harrison is also like heavily in this story. He actually played acoustic guitar on this song, which I didn't know until I was researching, which is awesome. And then Ringo played on the video. He didn't play on the recording.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting looking at all these like music legends. And like you got George Harrison, Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash, all these guys that seem to like scoot up to Tom Petty and view him like a peer. Like those are huge people, but it just felt like Roy Orbison even. It seemed like they were drawn to him, which is not the norm. And he seemed like the young guy, you know, in the, like, the Traveling Wilburys and stuff. Oh, do you think that those guys just recognized the talent in him, or was the combo of like talent in a good hang? And I don't know. I wonder about, gosh, how did they all gel and respect him so much immediately? It seemed like, at least from the outside.
Yeah. I think part of it was the fact that, you know, they were dealing with somebody who had his own level of fame. So it wasn't like, oh, you know, he's a Beatle. And, you know, even though Petty idolized the Beatles, it was just kind of this thing where they were able to kind of talk with each other and relate to each other on a different level. And it's interesting you mentioned George Harrison with I Won't Back Down, because he played guitar and he sang backing vocals, but there's also a story that Petty told where his original lyrics, he was missing one line, and it's the part where the line that says there ain't no easy way out, and he didn't have that line. He had the line, I'm standing at the edge of the world, was the original line, because he just couldn't figure out. And George Harrison heard it, and he said, what's with that line? That's no good. You got to change that.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's
being awesome. George Harrison, and, you know, being kind of frank and the way he was. And so Petty was like, yeah, you're right. And he came out, and that line really adds a lot to the song, because it talks about, you know, the kind of stuff you have to go through. So, it was this fascinating relationship. And, you know, it's interesting. They kind of, that group of guys, the Wilburys, they they came into that period, a lot of them were in rough parts of their career. You know, Roy Orbison hadn't done anything in a long time, and Petty was coming off this one album that was kind of iffy, and you know, Bob Dylan, the 80s were a tough time for him. Jeff Lynne, ELO had broken up, and they come together. And in the next 5 years or so, between Wilburys albums and their own solo albums, most of which Jeff Lynne was involved with, they kind of ruled the music world for that time. So it was really this amazing rejuvenation for these guys that came in part from connecting with each other.
That is so cool. And you can imagine, as Tom Petty, you can only imagine what Tom Petty must have felt to be affirmed by those guys, and especially by some Beatles, by like George Harrison, like a band that he, you know, loved. But I was reading the quotes from George Harrison's wife, and she was saying George Harrison really befriended Tom Petty at a time when Tom Petty, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but felt estranged a little bit from his band. His band were the people he worked with, but they weren't necessarily the people he was hanging with. And I guess Harrison had come along, and within, you know, very soon after meeting him, we gave him a big hug and was like, "You and I are going to be good friends for a long time." Yeah. And it talked about how Harrison would send him faxes, like, because that's how they were communicating. And just like, you know, "Hey, buddy, you're thinking of whatever." And it was like almost daily a lot of times. But I like the story about how when they were recording the actual vocals for Won't Back Down, that George Harrison was the one who helped. I don't know, there's some kind of like herbal thing that he put together because Tom Petty was having vocal problems that day. Do you remember this?
Yeah, something about it. He went and got him lozenges or something. Where he was, Tom had sort of a cold and something. So George was coming to the rescue no matter what. It was interesting. And Tom Petty kind of returned the favor. I think this story is in Warren Zane's book as well, that it was Tom who, George had all these Beatles tracks that had been unused, and they were sitting around, and they were kind of alternate versions and demos, things like that he had the master tapes for, and he would play them for Tom Petty, and Petty was like, "This is amazing, you know, why are people not hearing this?" And that kind of sparked George to talk to the others, and that's kind of what led to the anthology projects. It was kind of a reciprocal thing, because Harrison was hearing it through somebody else's ears who you know, just was like, "Wow, this is amazing stuff, people need to hear this." And so that was one of the key kind of starting points for what you know was such a huge thing in the middle of the 90s, that the Beatles anthology records.
It totally was. I didn't remember that is totally cool. Well, like, when you look at the lyrics of Won't Back Down, it's such a big, like, it feels like a life moment, affirmation song, but it's like you're making a statement. You know, you've been against hard things that are going on, and he's saying, "I won't back down." And then you got Free Falling, which is like similar in a different way. But they both feel like big life statements that he made in an artistically amazing way that was also commercially huge, which is, you know, it's those three things don't usually line up in a way that something authentic comes through, it's created in a way that can be consumed, and it's artistically excellent and is super popular. Do you know of any other things going on in his life outside of the fire of what else, like, he might have been going through to be feeling these things? Is this a midlife crisis going through, or I don't know, I just wonder where his head was at to be able to write songs like that back
then. I think it was all those things, and I think, like you mentioned, the band struggles as well, that you know, that this was this thing that he believed in, this band that he had built, and they had been through a decade of this amazing success, and then all of a sudden they were fraying a bit. And so a lot of that was playing into this, and, you know, whether he was having personal issues in his life, Free Falling really gives you that kind of feel, you know, this idea of Free Falling, which you could take one of two ways. You could think of it, it's this wonderful thing, or you're falling, you know, out of control.
Right.
Yeah. And then to come back with "I Won't Back Down," he talked about it, is that he had doubts about the song because it was so blunt. It was just so straightforward, and, you know, there was no kind of context for it. If you're just hearing the song, you know, what's he talking about? What is he back? You know, why is he kind of in this mode?
Right.
And it's just, it's so bracing. But the other key to the song that always blew me away is that I think why it works in part, if he had come out and kind of sneered these lyrics and kind of screamed them at you, I don't know if the song has the effect that it does. Instead, it's just kind of this relaxed thing. I won't back down. I won't get turned around. The way he sings those lyrics, it really adds something to it and makes it a little bit deeper. It's like, okay, you know, you're gonna take your shots at me, whatever happens, whether it's life or critics or whatever that case may be. You know, and even though there's no interview on record where he says the song is about the arson, of course that had to be playing in his mind because he had just gone through this trauma. Somebody, you know, they'd really tried to kill him is what they tried to do. And so that when you look at that as context, it just deepens this song so much. And the other thing, Ryan, that I really want to talk about this song is the fact that it might be the epitome of the one characteristic that Petty in his songs put forth more than anybody. And that's resilience. Because so many of his songs are about where, you know, his first big song, American Girl, you know, people kind of remember this buoyant chorus, but when you listen to the lyrics, the girl's been left behind by the guy, you know, and for one desperate moment there, he crept back into memory, you know, she's mourning this loss and yet she stands up to it. And then there are so many other songs like that throughout his career, you know, I Won't Scare Easy and, you know, She Went Down Swinging. This idea that, you know, life's going to hit you with stuff, but it's how you respond to it that kind of defines your character. And I think I Won't Back Down more than any other song. Like if you were to, an alien were to come down and you wanted to describe to him what Tom Petty was all about, I feel like I Won't Back Down might be the one that you would put on to play for that alien to actually describe what he was all about.
I think you're right. Gosh, resilience. That's certainly the word. I mean, gosh, that hits the nail on the head. Cause I've been trying to think like, what is it? It's like, he has this like hopefulness that comes through, but it not really, because he also has like the real and the not negative, but like he'll go to vulnerable places and he's not all sunshine, but resilience, that's it, that you're going through hard times but you're gonna make it through. And that's true, you know, even the line that you said Harrison suggested he change, there ain't no easy way out, that reminded me of a quote that Harrison said. And it was something like, do you know how hard it is for a guy from Liverpool to be able to have any kind of like authentic sound to his voice, where you can just, you know, or Tom Petty has like that Southern like swang to his voice, where he twang, whatever, he can make it, he can inflict that emotion easily. And you can see that line certainly does that. I just love even the chorus, Hey Baby, like you've got the biggest chorus line with that, like starts off with this huge rock, Hey Baby. How many songs start with Hey Baby?
Oh my goodness.
Of course, like all through the 50s from going back, but you don't hear that. You hear the authentic, you know, I'm not gonna back down from this thing. I heard the story of the band going on Saturday Night Live to perform, and I don't remember the dates exactly, but there was some kind of dispute in Tom was changing labels. And the label had fronted money for him to be on SNL in some way, and he chose not to play Won't Back Down. And it got back to him that the label head was unhappy about it. Mm-hmm. And the guy who told him the news was like, or Tom Petty was like, what? He wasn't happy about my song choice? And he was like, give me his number. And the guy wouldn't. And so he hangs up, and he ends up calling the president. And lays into him. He's like, did you ever tell Bob Dylan what to play on a program? You know? But like, it's interesting to think of anybody viewing Tom Petty not in the highest regard as like a Bob Dylan or Beatles or whoever, where, gosh, give him the artistic freedom. Let him do what he wants, because when he does what he wants, it's right. You know, it's so good.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, the interesting thing, you know, I interviewed Phil Jones, who was the drummer on Full Moon Fever. I interviewed him for my 80s book. We talked about Free Fallin', and he said that when they finished up the original tracks for Full Moon Fever, Petty took it to his label, MCA, and he gave them I Won't Back Down, Free Fallin', and Running Down a Dream. And the label came back and said, no, we don't like this. So that just goes to show you. Yes, isn't this amazing? So, you know, they didn't know what to do. They're like, you know, are we going to be able to release this music? And so they went back and worked on some other stuff. And in the interim, there was some sort of a regime change at MCA.
Yeah.
And so they went back to the label with the same songs. And then the label like, this is amazing.
So, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It just goes to show you that, you know, that it is sometimes there's a little bit of luck involved, and there can be record company interference even with a guy like Tom Petty that could mess it up. But the other thing that Phil told me is that's interesting, you know, I was asking him, you know, where do you think these songs kind of stand in the legacy of Petty, because they're not heartbreaker songs,
right? They're not.
And he said, well, let me put it to you this way. When he played the Super Bowl, there were four songs played, and three of them were I Won't Back Down, Running Down a Dream, and Free Fall. So clearly Petty had a great affinity for these songs. So it is interesting. It was kind of this one-off project. And, you know, he did work with Jeff Lynne after that, Into the Great Wide Open, Jeff produced, and Highway Companion, he produced, both great albums. But there is something special about Full Moon Fever and the songs on it. And really, I Won't Back Down is kind of the gateway to all that.
It would have to have been so gratifying to be against these odds, and even having your band question what you're recording and that saying this isn't that good, and then to have it come out and like, this is the biggest thing you ever did. And it was just on your own songs, your own merit. Mm-hmm. I saw that, you know, a couple years ago, there was the deal with Sam Smith's song Stay. Yeah. And you know, that's a great song. I mean, it's a killer song.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because it got in the news. The Won't Back Down got in the news because it came out that, well, it sure sounds, Sam Smith's song sure sounds a lot like I Won't Back Down. And Tom Petty and Jeff Lynne ended up getting, I think it was like a 12% cut of that song, which was huge. Isn't that crazy? I mean, that's a recent thing.
As if the Petty coffers needed any buffering, you know. But you know, to his credit, this was like kind of a lawyer thing where the publishing company said, oh, well, you know, we have to do this because there is this similarity. And Sam Smith said he didn't really, he hadn't really heard of I Won't Back Down. He didn't intend, and which you believe. And Petty, to his credit, came out and said, you know, I totally understand that. This happens in music. You get these things kind of in your head. I mean, George Harrison went through it where he had, you know, this big lawsuit with My Sweet Lord. And you know, Petty has dealt with it on both sides. The Red Hot Chili Peppers had a song that really sounded like Last Dance with Mary Jane, and so, you know, there was that. And then Petty kind of borrowed from ZZ Top on a song, what was the song from Highway Companion, but it slips my mind right now, but the riff is very much the same. I mean, that's all part of music, you know. They're what do they say, they're only 13 notes or whatever, right? They say, so you're gonna have this, but I really thought it spoke again to Petty's integrity, the way he responded to that. That he didn't come out and say, oh, you know, how could he do this? He stole my song. He said, look, I totally understand. It happened. Right. So that again is just an example of that.
Well, and so classy. Like, what a classy response. It's the, you took my thing. And so, like, the thing we were talking about earlier was, these are songs that have become part of the American soundtrack, or just, you know, world soundtrack. It's like, you could have said, I was never a Tom Petty fan, and have heard that song 50 times in your life and never realized it because it was on the radio playing somewhere. So you can certainly see how those melodies can sink into your subconscious.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about, on your book, how you landed on the top 100 best songs. One, gosh, that sounds difficult trying to choose between Tom Petty songs, like choosing between your kids. So one, how did you do that? And two, where did I Won't Back Down land on your list?
Oh, you know, for the second question, you know, honestly, I haven't looked at it in a while, so I'd have to look back. I'm guessing it was somewhere in the, if not in the top 10, very high in the top 15, somewhere in that neighborhood. I'd have to look back. But, you know, I've written a bunch of these books, Ryan. I did ones on Bruce Springsteen and the Rolling Stones and the Beatles. And, you know, and what I do is I kind of try to take all the personal connections to the songs out of it. It's not like, well, I Won't Back Down because I was listening to it at the dance with the, you know, my high school prom, and it meant, I try to take all that out of it. I try to just look at it and say, okay, what was the songwriter and the recording artist trying to, what was their objective for this song? and you know, how well did they meet that objective, and just try to give it as much of an objective look at it as possible, as if that were possible, because music is such a subjective thing. But again, right. I tried to take all that out of it. And then just, went through the fun part about those books is you get to go back through the whole catalog and listen to it all again. So that's fun. Cool. And just gave everything kind of like this preliminary ranking, like kind of a 5-star rating system. And then took the ones that were similarly ranked and kind of worked them against each other. Come up with a preliminary ranking, take a look at that. And sometimes I would take a look at that and say, this song's way too low. It's got to be higher, you know, and do it sort of that way. But didn't consider chart performance, didn't consider long-lasting resonance. Yeah, it was just about how they hit me and how, you know, I felt. Because, like, I feel like some of those consensus rankings that you get where, you know, the magazines, they'll pull like 100 different people. They kind of come up with the same stuff over and over again when they're ranking these artists. But with my process, you know, you're going to get the great songs like I Won't Back Down, but you're also going to get songs like Insider, which probably not too many Tom Petty fans know, that is just an incredible song, a duet that he did with Stevie Nicks. It just floors you. So that's kind of been my process when I've done those books. And so, yeah, I think I want to say I Won't Back Down was somewhere around number 12 or something like that. And it's always the case where when people see the ranking, they say, well, how can that only be? And then I'll say, well, listen to number 11 and listen to number 10 and then tell me, you know.
Well, that's fun, too. I love looking at music like that. And because that leads to conversations. So you can talk about this for hours.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. That's the thing about those books. That's what I always hoped. You know, while I knew that some people would come out of it saying, oh, well, you know, this ranking's crazy, what I hoped then that they would read it and see how much of a passion I have for the music and see how much of a fan I am for all these artists that I did profile.
Well, in that, man, being able to come to the realization that you needed to take your own personal bias, your own personal experience out. That's difficult to do, like to just look at something for what it is and cutting out your personal interaction with it. Because for like music, especially, there's so much emotion tied up in it, and you have memories. And so I love that. I love that you're able to like examine it for what it was and then talk about it as a thing in and of itself.
Yeah, and then it goes the other way too. Like for instance, with Bruce Springsteen, you know, people will try to go away from Born to Run as his number one song. And I just looked at it, well, like, you know, I'm listening to this as if I've never heard any of these songs. And the first time I hear Born to Run, what does it do to me? It blows you away, you know? Mm. So that ended up being my number one song. So it works both ways, that sometimes some people will try to be contrary and say, oh, this isn't, you know, people, it's just popular, but there's a reason sometimes why they are popular.
Well, there you go. Yeah, that's true. Well, Jim, thank you so much for coming on and talk today about I Won't Back Down. I'm going to include a link to your book in the show notes for people listening. But man, it's always a pleasure chatting with you. And thanks for talking about Tom Petty today.
No problem, Ryan. Anytime.
Thank you for listening to the Songs of Note podcast. Be sure and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. See you next time.